It's Thursday, the 2nd of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Earl Boykins. Brought to you by Fantrax and B-Baller224. If you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like B-Baller224, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. So thank you, B-Baller224. And of course, a big thanks to a new sponsor of the podcast, and that is Fantrax. If you don't know what Fantrax is, I suggest that you take note and get ready for some information that might blow your mind. But before I do that, I'll introduce myself. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, where you can watch each show and you want to interact with the show, tweet at me at redrock_bball. Of course, if you listen to this later on, you can always tweet at me at any time via that Twitter handle. I mentioned that today's, I haven't mentioned it yet, but I will now. Today's podcast is the Houston Rockets season in review. But it's important for me to talk about today's sponsor, and they'll be the sponsor of the podcast moving forward, and that is Fantrax. And if you don't know, it's Fantrax, Fantrax.com. It's a website. Yes, obviously, .com. Josh, come on. Where are you getting at here? Fantrax.com is a league hosting website, and if you aren't aware of it, you should head across to Fantrax.com right now and check it out, because it is, not only in my opinion, but almost from anyone's common sense opinion, the best free option for hosting leagues. They also have premium options as well, because they offer the most in-depth options. The Red Rock Dynasty League, which you've heard me reference all throughout last season, the 400-player deep league that we do, we host it on Fantrax, because Fantrax allows us to offer contracts to players. We have player salaries. We have player contract lengths. We have overseas stash players. We have minor league squads. We have as much customization as you could imagine on Fantrax. You play on Yahoo, you play on CBS, you play on ESPN. We know they're the big sites, but it doesn't offer you the same level of integration and customization at what Fantrax does. They have free options, and the free options are the most in-depth options that they have in the world of fantasy sports, and the premium options go one step further. You can do so much with this, and you'll see that when you join the Red Rock Leagues this season, how good Fantrax is in terms of offering a league hosting solution. If you've been on Fantrax before and you thought, their website looked a little bit old, they've upgraded everything. Everything's been given a fresh coat of paint. Everything looks a lot more schmick over on Fantrax.com. So in addition to all the great features that the Fantrax site has in terms of hosting these leagues and getting, especially if you want to do Dynasty and Keeper leagues, Fantrax is the only place to go. Instead of having your own separate notes and spreadsheets and that, you just keep it all on Fantrax. The contracts are there. You can automatically inflate and deflate contracts by dollars, by percentages, make guys free agents, do whatever you want. The level of control is, it's out of control on Fantrax, and I do recommend that you seriously consider hosting your leagues on there. And if you're hosting any sort of Dynasty and Keeper league, if you're not doing it on Fantrax, I'm sorry to say, but you're just doing it wrong. You have to check out what Fantrax has got. And as I said, the Red Rock Listener Leagues this season will be all hosted over on Fantrax as well. And that takes me to my second point for today, and that is the announcement of the first of the Red Rock Listener Leagues for the 2016-17 season. Yes, the 15-16 season is not over yet, but we're going to be doing so many Red Rock Listener Leagues this year. At this point, I've got 27 separate leagues in my mind to set up, so plenty of spots for all you guys. It won't be for everyone, obviously. It's going to be some selection criteria. The first one of these leagues that we're going to be rolling out, again, on Fantrax, is going to be the Red Rock 30-team league. So if you've never been in a league with 30 teams, well, it's tough, to be honest. The players that you get, you can't be stacking your teams with, you're going to take Draymond and Giannis at the turn. Cool. You're not going to do that. Your best player might end up being Derek Favors, and that's fine. It's tough. It's manageable, though. It's the NBA. There's 30 teams. 16 teams will make the playoffs. Exactly like the NBA, we'll have a draft lottery for the teams that don't make the playoffs. And it's a dynasty league. I don't know if I mentioned that. I probably did. I hope I did. It's a dynasty. You keep all your players moving forward till you work out the direction you want to take your team. So the details, it is a 30-team league. It will be on Fantrax. It is going to be a 9-category head-to-head league. It will include 13-man rosters. So yes, the league will go 390 players deep. But you will only need to roster, or you only need to have 6 starters on your team. So with that extra bench depth, it enables you to help build a roster very similar to the NBA. NBA obviously has five starters. We're going with six starters here, but because it's going to be a daily changes league, you'll be rotating guys in and out, but it gives you some flexibility to stash guys, to hold on to players. And I'm in a 30-team league on Fantrax already myself, and this one's going to be fairly similar to that one, because I thought it was a great concept. So this is the way that the league is going to play out. Initially, there'll be a random drawing of draft orders. Now, obviously, 30 teams in the Red Rock 30-team league, 30 teams in the NBA. So everyone will get an NBA team. That's the way it will work. We'll go through and we'll create random selection orders. So whoever comes out, John, let's say, could be a John, I don't know. And John, you get first pick. And what you get to do, John, with your first pick is you don't get to say, I'm picking, you know, Steph Curry, or I'm picking whoever. You get to say, I'm going to pick what selection in the first round I'm going to have. So you might say, I want pick one in the first round. And at pick one, I'm going to take the Golden State Warriors. And in round one, you have to take a player from your team. So, John, you're picking, you've got the first choice of any draft spot that you want. I'll take pick one, I'll take the Warriors, therefore I'll take Steph. The next guy might come out, might be Rob. Rob, you've got second choice of any draft spot that you want. Rob might say, I want pick 22. You go, why would Rob want pick 22? Well, he gets the 22nd choice of all the NBA teams. But then what he also gets is, in round two, he gets the eighth selection of the leftover players. So that means guys like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Russell Westbrook. Some of these players won't be selected because, you know, if you're the Warriors, Steph's going in round one. So Klay's going to be around. Draymond's going to be around. Russell's going to be around, assuming KD goes. So there's strategy involved there. Do you pick 30 and get the last choice of NBA teams and probably end up with someone like the Lakers, but then get first pick of the next round and take Russ and take Kyrie and take Klay with that pick? So that's the way it's going to work. And then from then on, it'll just be a standard snake draft. But there is factors to consider. So picking 30th, and the 31st pick in this draft will not be the 31st best player. It will be Russell Westbrook. It might be Kyrie. It might be Draymond. It might be, it's any of these guys who are on these teams with superstars. So very interesting. And I love the way that my other league did that. And that's what we'll be rolling out in this league. Now, you've heard the details. Obviously, more of that information will be to come. But I suppose what you want to hear now is, how do I enter this league? How do I apply to enter this league? Because as with all the listener leagues last season, I had to turn plenty of people away, and the podcast has grown probably tenfold since then. So I'm imagining a huge amount of applications for these leagues. Because I'm running so many different leagues over the offseason, I'm going to have different ways of applying for them. This first one, the way to apply is, you've seen the Facebook page, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Go over there, like the Facebook page. And on the Facebook post of this show, which will be, it's the Houston Rockets season in review, leave your name. Put a post, go, I want to be in the Red Rock 30-team league. And then I'll contact you, and then you'll have to, you know, you have to submit through some sort of application or just some information that I want from you guys, and then we'll choose from there. But if you're interested, if you want to express interest, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball, look for the Houston Rockets season in review podcast post, which is this one, episode 605. You'll see that on there. Go ahead, leave your expression of interest, and then we'll get the ball rolling from there. I imagine that spots will fill up pretty quickly, as they did last year for the Dynasty League, where we had, I think I got six, well, I know I did. We got 16 people in the league, but I think I turned away 50 or 60 from that. And as I said, the podcast has grown at least tenfold since then. So there is going to be competition. Get across, and it's not first in, best dressed, or anything like that. I'm going to be looking at all the people and taking in applications, but that's your first step, heading to facebook.com/redrockbasketball, finding the episode 605 post about the Houston Rockets season in review, and leaving a comment on it saying, Josh, get me into this 30-team dynasty league. If there's any more questions, and if there's something that I missed, make sure you let me know. I'm pretty sure I covered it. There'll be more details coming forward, but that's what we've got. We've got the new sponsorship with Fantrax here, and we've got the first announcement of the Red Rock listener leagues for next season, that being the Red Rock 30-team league. So everybody, get excited. And now, that's it for all that business. Now we're going to get onto the meat and potatoes of this show, and that is the Houston Rockets season in review. So
let's get to it.
Michael Bolton, thank you for your participation in all of the shows throughout the season. He's been a huge part of what this show has done. In as dumb as that sounds, I know that it always makes me laugh when I hear Mick throwing his "let's get to it" into every show. We're talking Houston Rockets, a team that was extraordinarily disappointing. I think that that's not unfair to say, given how bad their season went from being the Western Conference finalists last season to just barely scraping into the playoffs, getting the 8th seed, getting bundled out by the Warriors. They finished with a 41-41 record. They don't have a first-round draft choice, as they traded that away to Denver to acquire Ty Lawson, which was just obviously a horrible deal for both parties, really. Lawson was dreadful. He potentially just cost himself an NBA career, or a decent one anyway, from here on out. And the Rockets squandered a first-round pick on a nobody. It's not a nobody. On a guy who had honestly a dreadful year. They don't have any first-round picks. They have pick 37 and pick 43 in this upcoming NBA draft. There's a couple of early-ish second-round picks, but nothing overly exciting. And we look at their free agency situation. There's some interesting decisions they're going to have to make. Number one, I think that decision will be made for them, and that is Dwight Howard, who has a $23 million player option. There is literally 0.1% of a chance that Dwight opts in or opts out and re-signs in Houston, especially now that Mike D'Antoni has been signed as the head coach, given that Dwight and Mike really didn't mesh all that well when the two of them were with the Lakers. So Dwight is likely out of there. They've got two power forwards who are restricted free agents who were set to battle for the position this last season. Who's going to emerge as the starter? Who's going to be the one who gets paid? Who's going to be the one that gets traded not matched in restricted free agency? And Terrence Jones and Donatus Motiejunas were both useless. Jones was useless because he had an array of injuries, and then weird injuries, as per usual with him. But then when he played, he was just horrible. Motiejunas suffered a back injury that kept him out basically the whole season. He was traded once to Detroit, and that was rescinded due to a failed medical, according to the Pistons, which Motiejunas disputes. But honestly, he didn't look great either. So they're two restricted free agents. What do they do with these two guys? They're going to retain, you'd think, one of them, but who knows who it is at this point, which we'll get into a little bit later. Then you got Josh Smith, who they brought back after the Clippers waived him. And Jason Terry is an unrestricted free agent as well, and he's a million years old, so I'm not sure there's too much to get excited about there. And then we've got Michael Beasley on a $1.5 million non-guaranteed deal. He played really well to end the season, so you assume that he would be back. And then Andrew Gardlock, the team has a $1 million team option. He didn't really show much in that late season stretch when he was playing minutes, so he might not be back with this team. So all in all, a very interesting season. The big man front court rotation is completely up for grabs. Howard gone, Jones and Motiejunas potentially both gone as well, and it's going to be very intriguing to see the way that they approach this system, or this roster and this setting with what they've got to do. Let's talk players now, and let's talk with the one and only Jim Harden, who was roundly criticized for his performance this season. Showed up to the start of the season fat, out of shape, unfit, and back to being atrocious on defense. Yep, that's all true. He was also an absolute animal in fantasy leagues. He was destructive. He finished the season as the third best player in 8-cat leagues. He was the fourth best player in 9-cat leagues. Just a slight dip in rankings from last season, where he was third in 9 and second in 8-cat leagues. But when you look at his numbers, did he really dip that much? He scored more points at 28.8. He scored more threes at 2.9. He got more rebounds at 6.1. He got more assists at 7.5. He dropped his steals down to 1.7 from 1.9. His blocks went from 0.7 to 0.6. His field goal percentage dropped by 0.03%. That's not true, by 0.3%. And his free throws dropped from 87 to 86. He shot 36% from three, down from 38 as well. So a couple of drops, but all in all, his season was almost identical to what he did last year, and he was a tremendous option. And you could get James Harden, people were picking him at 4 and 5 in drafts, and I don't think that was the right spot. He's tremendous, and he continues to be tremendous. And now Mike D'Antoni is going to be his coach. And I had a lot of people saying, "Oh, is Harden in for a breakout now that D'Antoni's the coach? How much better does he get? What's he going to average? 32, 10, and 10." That would be obviously massive. But how much better can you get than a guy going 29, 6, and 7.5, 3 triples, 1.7 steals? How much better can you actually get? Maybe he can you get his steal numbers back up there. Maybe he can try a bit more on defense. But seriously, 7.5 assists at a shooting guard, 6 rebounds, 3 triples, 29 points. You can't get better than these numbers unless you're Steph Curry and you're hitting 5 triples. His numbers are out of control. He's dead set locked in as a top 5 pick next year and probably a top 3 pick behind Steph and KD most likely. And I wouldn't even have a massive issue with picking him above KD in a lot of situations, because what he does, those assist numbers are just ridiculously valuable to get them out of a shooting guard eligible player. Puts up tremendous numbers. Obviously, the field goal percentage is different from KD, but he is a guy that in the top 3, you really shouldn't. If it gets past pick 3 and James Harden's available, you just grab him and you don't think about it. If someone gets queued and takes Russ or Kawhi or LeBron or Davis or someone, you take Harden, and he will return these consistent numbers. Over the past 4 years, he's ranked 3rd, 5th, 2nd, and now 3rd in 8K leagues. You can't get better than that. He plays mega minutes. He played 38 minutes for the third time in the last 4 seasons. He barely misses a game. He puts up your numbers all over the place. He had a tremendous year from a fantasy point of view. He was also great in his advanced stats. Easily led the team in 13.3 win shares. Easily the best on the team in win shares per 48. Box score plus minus, a crazy 7.1 offensively, but as we know, a negative defensively, a negative 0.4, a PER of 25.3, a true shooting of 60%. He does absolutely everything for this team. He does, and yes, he's not the prettiest guy to watch with all the foul drawing and the dribbling and all that sort of stuff, but when we're talking fantasy, we know that he's going to get a shitload of minutes. We know that he's going to have the ball in his hand, and we know that he is going to accumulate tons and tons of stats. So despite the defensive failings, despite your distaste for his personal dealings with certain Hollywood celebrities, despite your distaste for him drawing fouls or dribbling the air out of the ball and other players standing around, he's going to play minutes and he's going to just rack up numbers like they are going out of fashion. Jim Harden, he's 26 years old. He's got at least another 3 to 4 years of this sort of production up his sleeve. And is there any better player sans Steph Curry as an offensive guy? There pretty much isn't. He is tremendous, and don't forget that when you're thinking about players and thinking about draft targets. The guy is 26 years old. He's not ancient. He's very young, and he's extraordinarily consistent and extraordinarily productive. You can't get much more, I don't know. You can't get better than that, really. And the team was a 7.6 points better per 100 possessions with him on the court than with him off. And that doesn't come really as much of a surprise given how good he actually is. So that's a lot of talk on James Harden. And you're probably aware going, Josh, I know he's good. Shut up. Cool. I'll shut up. Let's get on to the next guy. And that next guy is Trev Ariza, a guy that, if you looked at it on the surface, I reckon most people go, he was shit. He had a bad year. He didn't, actually. He finished last season 36th in 9 cat leagues. He finished this season 38th. Not much difference. 8 cat leagues, 53 this season. Last season, 48. Oh, sorry, that's not true. Last season, 39. So a bit of a drop in the 8 cat standings. But still, yeah, really good numbers. And a guy that's extraordinarily underrated in fantasy, you would never pick him in the top 50, and you'll never have to pick him in the top 50, but he gives you those sort of numbers around that 50 mark. He played 35 minutes a game. He averaged 12.3 points, which is not great, but when he gives you 2.5 threes, he gives 4.5 rebounds, he gives you over 2 assists, which is an underrated part of his game, but 2 steals a game, over 2 threes, over 2 steals, is a very rare group of players who give you that. I think there might be 2 or 3 players in that group, Steph, Kawhi, and Trevor Ariza, I think, is the group. There might be one other player. I can't remember who it is. But that is an elite group, and that is elite contributions in those categories. 78% from the free throw line, 36% shooter from 3. The problem with Ariza is that he's a negative in other areas. He is 30 years old, but he's on a very cheap contract. I don't really see Houston having anyone in the wings who's going to just take his role, or bringing someone in who's going to completely displace him. I reckon you get one more year of Trevor Ariza as a top 75 guy, and then maybe it starts to drop off out to sort of level 100. But he is underrated, and I think that he'll drop again this season, and you'll be able to pick him in the 70s or 80s, and I think you get top 70 value back just based on his steals and three-pointers and decent free throws and solid scoring. That's what you get out of Trev Ariza. In terms of his on-off numbers, they were a positive, and there weren't many players on this team that were a positive. He was a 2.5, so that's obviously not as good as Harden, but it's still pretty impressive. His other advanced numbers, He's a guy that goes under the radar, I think, when you look at him, but he was second on the team in box score plus minus. He did finish third on the team in win shares. He was obviously a key contributor. His win shares per 48 were a little bit down because he played so many minutes, but still one of the best players on this team and a guy that does consistently get undervalued, in my opinion. Did I even talk about what numbers he did? Yeah, I talked about his stats. Dwight Howard. What a shitful season this was for Dwight Howard. I was expecting a pretty decent year, and it wasn't horrible, but he's a guy that when you look at his rankings, okay, he was 87th in 9-cat. That's better than 154th the year before, but you can't count that because his free throws are so bad. 8-cat, he was the 64th ranked player. Cool. He was 90th last season. But where you've really got to look at is where he fits in the punting rankings, the 9-2s and the 8-2s. In a 9-2 league, meaning 9 categories minus the worst 2, he was 23rd. In an 8-2, he was 22nd. These are obviously really, really good numbers that I don't think many people pay attention to. He averaged 13.7 points, 11.9 rebounds. He got you a steal, he got you 1.6 blocks, and he shot 61% from the field. Yes, he shot 48% from the line, but I'll stress it again. You know what Dwight Howard is. He's a terrible free throw shooter. And if you're not taking that into consideration when you're drafting, well, you've already lost. So you don't worry about it. Dwight can go one of a million from the line. It doesn't matter. You shouldn't be caring about that category. Everything else was really good and puts him as a top 30 player in the season. And you look at it, and I did look at him this season and go, something doesn't look right. He had a few really big games, but towards the end, JB Bickerstaff phased him completely out of the offense. He averaged only 8.5 field goal attempts per game, hit them at a huge 61%, but not enough attempts, not involved, and it took away some of his defensive numbers as well. Dwight is going to go and sign somewhere, and he is going to be underrated next season. I can almost guarantee it. You won't pick him in the top 30, no chance. Well, you won't pick him in the top 50, most people. But in a head-to-head league, again, where you've got to deal with that free throw percentage, I know, but he will comfortably be a top 50 player in that sort of setting next year. Absolutely no doubt, because he's going somewhere and he's going to start and he's going to play 30 minutes and he's going to be more involved offensively than 8 shots a game. He will have to be, especially for this first year of his contract. Now, we know injuries, but towards the end of the year, he played pretty well, and he played through a lot of these problems, so it wasn't really too much of a concern. So I'm really excited to see what Dwight can bring next season. In terms of his advanced numbers, look at his on-off numbers. He was just a plus 0.5, so that's not superb, but second on the team in win shares. His box score plus minus, as per usual, really solid defensively. He was second on the team, first on the team if we're not including Sam Decker's 3 games, which we won't. So he led the team in defensive box score plus minus, had really nice defensive win shares numbers, a solid 18.9 PR, good true shooting. He was good, except for when he wasn't. And I think that he's going to be a lot better next season because he's going to be that little bit more involved offensively. He won't have to deal with the personality clashes with Harden. He won't be in a fractured environment most likely. And I think we see a slight renaissance from Howard. Now, he's not going to go back to Orlando, Dwight Howard, but we act like he's 35 years old. He's only 30. And yes, 30 is not a great age for players, and he's not going to likely go anywhere near that peak level. But he'll be better than last year. He'll be more like the Dwight of maybe 2 years ago for at least a year or two, and then the decline will start to come. We've already seen some of his defensive performances drop, but I still think that with more offensive involvement, we'll see. And again, he was ranked 22nd in 9-cat league, so how much better does he get? Does he become a top 20 punting guy? Yeah, I think there's a massive chance of that, and you're going to be able to get him at a 3-5 round discount next season. I'm pretty confident, but it's only for some people who are willing to go the punting route. And if you're not willing to go the punting route, just erase those last 10 minutes of listening. If you're not punting and you've got Dwight Howard, or if you're playing in Roto without going for a punt in a roto league, which is so tough to do, and I don't recommend it. If you're not punting, you've lost. You can't deal with it. And same goes for Drummond, same goes for Jordan. You can't win. It is just that big a negative to have Dwight on your team. Pat Beverley. Really like Beverley. I really think he's an underrated NBA player for what he does. Nothing flashy, clearly. He was ranked 81st in 9-cat leagues, actually 51st post-All-Star break, 95 in 8-cat, and then 62 post-All-Star. So put up some really decent numbers, and probably, to be honest, the best season of his career. And I think that he is the guy that is going to benefit the most for Mike D'Antoni. Harden will get a bump. KJ McDaniels has got a huge chance to put up numbers. I really think that Sam Decker becomes a very, very interesting guy as a second-year player who barely played. But Beverly, to me, is a guy who can start. We've seen just shitful guards really jump out of nowhere. Does Jody Meeks' name ring a bell to anyone? Who was, you know, a must-own fantasy player under D'Antoni in Los Angeles. Beverly hit 1.7 threes this year at 39%. He is a solid three-point shooter. He is as good a pairing with James Harden as you can find. He only averaged 9.6 points, but has a robust 3.6 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.3 steals, and percentages that aren't good, but they don't hurt you too much. I think that he can have a jump. I think he can average 2 threes a game. I think he can get to 12 or 13 points. I think he can get to 4.5 assists, and I think he can get to 4 rebounds. And he is a guy who can push to 1.5 or 1.7 steals. He only played 29 minutes a game because he was splitting time with Ty Lawson to start the season, which was not a great idea. I think that he goes out there and plays more minutes heading into next season at a higher pace, at a D'Antoni pace. He is a real breakout candidate to me, Beverly. I think he is tremendously underrated by a lot of people. He's only 27 years old. I think that D'Antoni is going to bring out a huge performance from him. He is on a ridiculously cheap contract of only $6 million declining for the next couple of seasons. He is going to be the starting point guard on this team. Yes, Harden's going to rack up the assists, but Beverly's going to sit there. He's going to hit 2 threes. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to get steals. And he's going to come under the radar for a guy. And you can pick him in probably the last 3 rounds of a draft. And I expect him to return top 70 value, which is a bit of a jump on what he had this year. But I think he can probably get there. Maybe I'm being overly ambitious with Beverly. The next player I want to talk about is a player who barely played for this team. But when he played, he had such a what is happening sort of situation. Like, where is this coming from? And you know I'm talking about Mick Beasley. He played 25 games. He played 18 minutes per game in those 25 games. But he ranked 9th. Sorry, let's try the end. He ranked 138th in 9-cat leagues. 144th in 8-cat leagues. It's per game, but it's also in just 18 minutes a game. Now, he had to be owned at points in the year because he was just scoring at a ridiculous rate. He averaged 12.3 points in less than 18 minutes. So we look at per 36 numbers. That means he was a 24-point scorer per 36. It's ridiculous. He had 4.8 rebounds. So he was like a 24 and 10 guy per 36. Crazy. Now, he doesn't do much else. Half a block, half a steal, 0.8 assists, but he shot 51 and 79 as his percentages, which is crazy good. For him, he wasn't really that sort of a shooter, but he came back from China looking like a marginally different player. Is he a starting player for this team moving forward? You'd have to think that he's in consideration given the way that Motiejunas played and Jones is just an absolute afterthought and Josh Smith is finished. Is Beasley a candidate? Yeah, he is. I wouldn't say he's a great candidate. I think his best role is a 25-minute, 24-minute role off the bench as a 3 and 4 sort of guy. I think that's his best role. Come out, score. Beasley's just going to score. Beasley's just going to score. Beasley's just going to score. And now he's going to play under D'Antoni. Can he develop a 3-point shot? Can he start scoring at a higher clip? I think this is all possibilities. Would I be drafting him in a standard league? At this point, probably not. Does he have dynasty upside? We know he's got immense talent. Does he realize on his fifth chance here, you know, after playing in China, that I've got to pull my head in? And he did. He had his head pulled in at the end of last season, and it translated into some crazy numbers. It's extraordinarily small sample size. And what does it mean? We don't 100% know. But I'm interested enough to see how it goes. Now, the team was absolutely horrific with him on the court. They were negative 10.7, so that's not working in his favor. His defensive box score plus minus was atrocious. It was a negative 2.5. His box score plus minus was equally bad, almost 3.4. In terms of win shares, he gave win shares per 48, 1.28, which is fourth on the team. So provided a little bit there, but it's very hard to know exactly what's happening with this team given the way that they performed at the end of that season and the injuries and the player movement and the fractured locker room and all that sort of stuff. But he's a guy at 27 years of age who, you know, maybe he's got a couple of decent seasons for your 16-team leagues and those deeper dynasties. He's going to have a little bit of value. And finding someone who can average 12 or 13 points in minimal minutes, get you 5 rebounds, get you good percentages, it's really tough to find. You get in those last parts. The players ranked, you know, around 180 to 250. They're averaging 7 points. You know, 12 points is a big, big jump, and it's a huge, huge factor. He's averaged more points than, say, Pat Beverly. He averaged more points, or maybe he didn't. I'll double check this. Exactly the same points as Trevor Ariza, just showing you how hard it is to get these sort of points that Beasley did. Clint Capela is the next guy up, and his per 36 numbers looked really impressive to me, and he got a chance to start out of position at power forward, and it didn't really translate, and I thought he was a guy that when he got that opportunity at starting at power forward, you had to own him. You had, as long as you could deal with his free throw percentage, because he's another one like Howard. It didn't quite pan out that way, and eventually he got moved to the bench. But he showed me enough to think that with Howard gone, they don't need to bring in a starting center next season. He is the starting center. He'll be in his third season. He is a tremendous defender. He finished just behind Howard in defensive box score plus minus for the season at 1.7. Win shares, he was, I think, fourth on the team in defensive win shares. He finished fourth on the team in total win shares. He had a great win shares per 40. I think he was second in the team in that advanced metric. Everything he did was very impressive. He had a plus 5.9 on-off number. Very, very impressive stuff from Capela. Now, what did he average? He played all 82 games and played 19 minutes, up from 8 minutes and 12 games in his rookie season. Had 6.7 points, but we look at the 6.3 rebounds in 19 minutes, 0.8 steals, 1.1 blocks, and 58% shooting. Yes, he was a 38% shooter from the free throw line, and he took 2.6 attempts in his 18 minutes, which projects out to a definite punt guy at 5 attempts if he's playing 30-plus minutes. That is a concern, but you have to deal with that. But you're going to get a monstrous field goal percentage. You're going to get a shit ton of blocks. You're going to get big rebounding numbers. He can guard perimeter guys in a pinch as well, better than, say, someone like Dwight can. He gets you steals, and I think his scoring under D'Antoni should develop as well. I think that Capela is in for a massive breakout, assuming you're considering your punting situation, but he should be that guy that you're looking at. And if we look at what he did as a full season in a 9-2 rank, 103rd. That's really good in 18 minutes. Obviously, 8-2, 135th. These are really, really good numbers. His per 36 numbers were still great. They weren't quite as good as what his rookie season were, but they weren't far away, to be honest. He actually scored more per 36, and the blocks dropped a little bit, but we saw a huge jump in his field goal percentage. I can't wait for Clint Capela. Look, Houston might bring in someone. I don't think they need to spend the money. Capela is a guy who can handle being a starting center. And as I've said, he played out of position when he started this season. But when he came in and subbed in for Dwight as the backup center, I loved what he was able to do. And I think that he is a tremendous target in a punt free throw situation. If nobody believes in him, which they should, and if you listen to this podcast, they'll know that I'm a big Capela fan. You need to be getting a hold of him, because he has got top 50 punt free throw upside. I think that is definitely his upside. And that might come in 2 years' time, but he has got that. He can average 11 boards, 2.5 blocks, 60% from the field, 1.5 steals. He can average all that, get you 12 or 13 points. I think that Capela is probably the most exciting young piece on this team. And as I've done the last couple of podcasts, I've went you through, that's terrible English. I took you through some of my player comps and the player comp model. If I look at Clint Capella's top numbers, the first one that comes up is Justin Williams. Yeah, nothing too exciting there, but out of his top six comparisons, two Anderson Varejao seasons come up, a Kenneth Faried season came up, and a Kostas Koufos season came up. Now, Varejao was a really super tremendous fantasy asset in those seasons when he could stay on the court. He was a guy that would give you top 50 numbers. And if Capela can turn out like that, and I think he can, plus, you know, the Faried and plus a Kostas Koufos, who, you know, on a per-possession basis is a really decent player, Capela can develop into something really, really interesting in this league, and I'm really excited to see what he can bring. A huge second year from him, and now he heads into that pivotal third season where we all know where things can start to go through the roof. Next up, my mate, Terrence Jones. I say my mate because I'm not a huge fan of him. He is a guy that, and he's one of these guys that, much like a Tony Roten, who, when he plays, and if he plays 30 minutes, the fantasy numbers are going to come. He'll be a top 69 cat guy, no doubt. But he's really bad, and that's going to limit his ability to play 30 minutes. So at the start of the season, when the Rockets didn't have Josh Smith, when there was no thought of playing Capela at power forward, when Donatas Motiejunas was out for the foreseeable future, Terrence Jones was going to start at power forward, and nobody else was going to start. There was no one else. He was going to get 30 minutes unopposed, and that meant the stats were going to come. But he was that bad that they said, you know what, Jonesy? You can just sit down because we are going to start Marcus Thornton instead. Marcus Thornton. We'll start him instead. And then Jones suffered every injury he could possibly have. He had a case of scurvy. He lost a couple of limbs, had them reattached. Of course, I jest, but this guy just had, he got in a car accident and suffered a concussion. Everything went wrong for this guy. Now, someone's going to offer him a decent deal. Maybe it's Houston, but he's really just not good. I just don't think he's a great player. He played just 21 minutes a game in 50 games, but barely saw the court at the second half of the season. He was 232nd player in Ninecat leagues this season. He was 68th the year before, so such a huge, huge fall off. He was post All-Star break, he was 400th, and he was outside the top 400 in 8-cat leagues. He was just absolutely abysmal this season, averaging 8.7 points, half a three, four rebounds, 0.5 steals, 0.8 blocks, 45 and 66. I don't believe in Terrence Jones, as you're probably well aware, but if he falls into a situation where Jones, we're going to give you 32 minutes as a starter, then he'll be a top 60 guy. There's no doubt in my mind that that'll be the case. But he's just not good enough to keep in that spot. And when teams are throwing Marcus Thornton out there because we can't play you, Terrence Jones, that's a real concern. He's got a lot of thinking to do. Maybe this season what wakens him up. Maybe he goes to a new environment that freshens him up. He's only 24, but I'm not a believer in Terrence Jones whatsoever. If and there's a lot of people who do believe in him, I would be trading him away. Hey, Terrence Jones, just a bad season, mate. Luck. Houston, terrible. Harden, he was fat. He wrecked the team. Why would you want to play with him in a locker room? Jones will be all right. I've just got too many power forwards, mate. You can have him. How about you give me someone back in return? Why don't you give me Clint Capella back? Oh, that's fine. That's an okay deal. Talk him up. Use narratives to work a better deal. Jones is not good. Corey Brewer is also not good. He finished the season ranked 262nd, and he was 142nd last year in 9-cat. 251 versus 133 in 8-cat leagues. He signed a contract in the offseason. He's got two more years left at over $7.5 million each. They are not looking like great contracts. Or it's not looking like a great contract at the moment. He averaged just 7 points in his 20 minutes. 0.7 threes, 2.5 rebounds, and the real kicker with him is he averaged just one steal, and that's where Corey Brewer's value is made, is by getting steals. He hit 38% of his shots. He hit just 26% from three. He is an abysmal three-point shooter, but he'll go out there and have a game where he shoots six threes, and you go, shit, well, where did that come from? He's a three-point shooter now. Well, no, he's not. Not really a fan of him moving forward. He was a negative 4.7 on-off, and I should have touched on Terrence Jones' on-off numbers because he was negative 14.8. He was worse than Ty Lawson, and that is saying something. When you're worse than what Ty Lawson was, you must have been absolutely putrid, and he was. We talk about the... I didn't even talk about Terrence Jones' advanced numbers. I'm sure they weren't good. He finished with a negative box score plus-minus. His win shares were okay, actually, at 1.5. So not too bad, but nothing really gets me too interested with what he's able to do. As for Brewer, he was worse and had less expectations, but he was a guy that in a 14-team league, you could go and, I'm going to get Corey Brewer because he'll get me double digits. No, he won't. He won't get me double-digit steals. He'll get me, you know, 2 steals, 1.5 steals a game, and that can be really valuable. But when he's only getting one steal, he can't shoot threes, his shooting drops off, he's not scoring, he's not rebounding, there's not a lot to like with Corey Brewer. Speaking of not a lot to like, Josh Smith returned to the Houston Rockets after somewhat of a renaissance here last season. Signed with the Clippers, they said enough's enough. They cut him, and he ended up back in Houston. It didn't really matter because he still wasn't good. He was the 366th ranked player, 9-cat post All-Star, 313th 8-cat. He was out of the rotation until the very end of the season. Michael Beasley took his spot in the rotation. In the end, he ended up playing 16 minutes a game in 59 games, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 0.6 steals, 0.8 blocks, 37 and 54, and 29.8 from 3. That is as miserable a selection of percentages as you get. He is a horrible shooter. He's getting worse, but he doesn't realize that he's getting worse. And that is the biggest bad combination you can have in a player. Have some self-awareness, Smith. Have some self-awareness. I can't shoot. Maybe I shouldn't be shooting these. But he doesn't get it. And that is as bad a player as you can get in my mind. And I've talked about criticisms of players before and my take on things. I don't care if someone takes a shot and misses. Or Durant, you choked. You miss their shots. But Smith routinely does it. And when it becomes a habit and a pattern, that's the concern. Josh Smith hasn't been able to shoot for 5 years, yet continually does so. Surely someone's tapping him on the shoulder and going, Josh, Not a good three-point shooter. Don't take him. Not a good long two shooter. Don't take him. But you know what you are? Super athletic and you can dunk over anybody. And he'll go, nah, man, I'm right. I'll just take threes and hit him at 20%. Can't hit free throws either. Can't do anything. Will he find a role? Yes. Will it be on almost a minimum deal? Almost definitely at this point. He is almost as big a negative for a player who used to be all-star caliber that there is in the league. He was a negative in win shares for this team, negative 0.4, and that is really, really tough to do. He posted a negative 4.1 box score plus minus. Again, just horrible, horrible numbers for Smitty. His on-off numbers actually looked all right, plus 0.5. So okay there, but he didn't play a huge amount of minutes, just 421 minutes. Really not a good fantasy player, and I do not expect any sort of bounce back. Jason Terry could very well retire. He was playing minutes above Ty Lawson. That is as big an indictment on Lawson as we can get. 288th in 9-cat. He finished 295th in 8-cat leagues. He averaged 5.9 points, 1.3 threes, but he offers nothing else apart from the threes. Yeah, solid free throws, but half an attempt a game. It's not really swinging that category at all in your direction. He hit 35% of his three-pointers. At his age, he's a guy that is probably suited to a 12 to 13-minute role, coming out and sniping threes and hitting one of those a game. But your league is going to have to be extraordinarily deep. And I reckon in the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League, I don't even know if he would get picked at this point with 390 players getting picked at a 39-year-old Jason Terry, who's without a contract. Pretty sure I wouldn't be going there. Donatas Motiejunas was really, really piss poor this season. And back injuries cost him a lot of his flexibility and mobility. He finished the season 364th. Down from 132nd the year before. Now, I am a big Donatas Motiejunas fan, but he did not do me any favors in terms of my predictive abilities. He played 15 minutes a game in his 42 games, 6.5 points, 3.2 rebounds, half a three, an assist, half a steal, 44 and 60. He hit just 30% of his threes. He can hit threes. This is as bad as he is going to get. Now, whether he comes back to Houston, I think he does. And he can be a guy that they work into a starter's role. And they started him for a big chunk of the end of the season. He didn't play many minutes and he didn't look great doing it. But I think in an up-tempo D'Antoni offense, he can play some center as well. So he could spell Capella and play some at the four as well. I do like his game. But the problem with him is he needs to be playing 30-plus minutes to have any sort of hope of being a top 100 player. He's not a guy who's going to be able to just rack up big block numbers or big steal numbers or hit a big amount of threes. He had a few big games this season, but not many. And I do think that acquiring him in Dynasty is as dirt cheap as you can get him at the moment. And I do think he's got a big ability to bounce back because I do really like what he can do. The problem is does he end up on this team? Now, he did finish with a solid plus four in his on-off numbers. His other advanced numbers weren't so ideal. He was really poor in box score plus minus. His win shares weren't great. His win shares per 48 were absolutely disgusting. But he's 25 years old. I place a lot more faith in him than I do in Terrence Jones, but his game is nowhere near as fantasy friendly. And it's going to be a stretch for him to return to the top 150 next season, but he should be better than ranked 364 where he was this year. Andrew Gawdlok signed on at the end of the season. I don't think we got really much to talk about with Gawdlok. He played 10 games, 6 minutes, 2.8 points, 0.4 rebounds, 0.4 assists. His contract likely won't get guaranteed. I don't think there's much to get excited about with him. Montrezl Harrell is a guy that showed interesting parts to his game. Aggressive rebounder, manic rebounder, suspended for pushing a ref in the D-League. Not a great look there, obviously, but did play 41 games, 10 minutes a game, 3.5 points, 1.7 rebounds, 0.3 blocks, and shot 63% from the field and 52% from the free throw line. To me, and it's not just the dreadlocks, he projects as a Kenneth Faried type, a guy that is an aggressive rebounder, a guy that can score a bit and post a decent field goal percentage, but does not do anything else. His player comps, nothing looks great on them. Jelani McCoy, Darvin Ham, Greg Smith, Cliff Rozier, Chris Wilcox, nothing that's really standing out to me and going, oh, look, there's something really to like about Harrell moving forward. Now, with Howard likely or gone, basically, with Terrence Jones and Donatas Motiejunas both potentially not there, you would expect that Harrell's not going to play 9 minutes a game moving forward. He will play more than 41, and he could be a 17 to 18 minute a game guy. And that could mean that instead of being a player who ranked 373rd this season, that he finds himself inside the top 250. And his trajectory will move forward. But to me, his upside is probably 130 at best, and I don't see a lot to like about him. KJ McDaniels. Just been lost since arriving in Houston. 41 games this year at 6.6 minutes a game, 2.4 points. We know his defensive potential, the high block numbers, high steals, decent rebounder, but hasn't shown anything. If there is a player that you should be speculating on for the D'Antoni bump, McDaniels is that guy. If he starts to get, even though he's super athletic, if he starts to get minutes, and we saw that in Philly when he was there before the trade, if he can get 25 minutes a game, which is a massive stretch at this point, but if he can, then he's got the ability to become a top 120 player. Absolutely. We saw nothing of it last season at all, and that's a concern. But he did lead this team in on-off numbers at plus 20.7. Very, very limited minutes to really make too much of a big deal of that, but it's impressive nonetheless. But a really poor box score plus minus, a poor win shares figure, a horrible PER, nothing that really went his way this season. But the new coach could be all he needs. If you're looking to take a punt on someone in a league that goes 300 plus, he's the guy to look at, because he does have top 100 upside, definitely. But the chances of him reaching that upside, I think, is it's not completely minimal. But it's pretty close to being it's pretty close to not happening. I think that's probably the best way of saying it. The last player is Sam Decker, and we didn't see anything from Sam Decker. He played just 3 games, 2 minutes per game, offered absolutely nothing stat wise. But as a guy who's a power forward who can stretch the floor, will he find a role with D'Antoni? I think yes. I think that he should be a guy that plays more minutes than Harrell, and maybe you start Motiejunas and you play Decker 22 minutes, and he was bothered with back injuries all last season. There was a front court clutter, which is going to thin out now. He's another guy that I would be happy to take a flyer on as a cheap deal, and a guy that should jump from the 400s up to, he's ranked 437th for the season. Could he go from 437th to 237th? Absolutely. I think that he could find himself maybe in the best case scenario sneaking inside the top 200. And that's something to look out for. So he has got a tremendous amount of potential to me to be unlocked. We've seen nothing of him, so it's basically going to be his rookie season next season. But the type of player that he projects as, I think, fits really well under Mike D'Antoni. And I'm going to be very intrigued to see what D'Antoni does with him once he gets his hands on him. That is the Houston Rockets from the 2015-16 season. I'm going to take a quick break, come back and look at a couple of overseas stash players that the Rockets have got, and then answer your questions about this team. This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see. Interesting Euro stashes that are worth talking about, so that's exactly what we're going to do now. The first one of those is a guy who I was hoping would come over for this last season. It didn't eventuate, and that is Sergio Yui. Whether Sergio ever comes over now, I think he is in doubt. I think he signed a new 4-year deal with Real Madrid for this last season. Not really. I doubt we see him play in the NBA. Maybe he does a Pablo Prigioni, comes over at 35, but I doubt it. What he is a point guard who is a scorer. He averaged 11.5 points, 4.7 assists, 0.6 steals, But what's really interesting with him, another 1.8 threes, and his last four seasons over in Europe have given you 1.8, 1.6, 2, and 1.8 threes. He's a really decent shooter, a big-time, big shot maker, big clutch player as well. And I thought he would have fitted in really well before the Rockets acquired Ty Lawson as that sort of backup behind Harden and behind Pat Beverley. If you own him in a dynasty league, at this point it feels like somewhat of a sunk cost, and I don't think you're going to be able to recoup that value unless someone thinks he's coming over, but I don't think we're going to see him. And if we do see him, we're not going to see him at his best. Alessandro Gentile is another guy who there's whispers of coming over, and he's been playing in Italy. He's obviously Italian. He could come over, and he projects as an interesting guy, but not someone I'm massively excited about. He's a small forward. He's 6'6". He's currently 23 years old. He played. He played for Armani Milano last season. He averaged almost 13 points a game. Or 0.9 steals, but 3 assists, 3 rebounds. So sort of that wing facilitator player. A really horrible 3-point shooting year, and it's been horrible for him basically the last 2 years. Shot just 25% from 3 on 3.4 attempts, 42% from the field. These are not great numbers at the European 3-point line. We look at his advanced numbers. Win shares, nothing to really write home about there. A PER of below average 14.5, so a disappointing season from him when he was at 16.7 last season. Usage, massively high usage of 29% as well, and really poor offensive rating, which is only 100 in defensive rating, 103.8. So nothing great from Gentile. The Rockets do have a bit of room on that wing, though. There's a reason, but then it's McDaniels and Decker, if you consider him a three. So if Gentile comes across, he can find himself in a 17, 18-minute role and be decent. He's still young. He's still got time to develop, but I'm not massively keen on what he can bring. But as a distributing small forward, sort of in a Chandler Parsons type of role, which Parsons played to perfection, obviously, with the Rockets, Gentile might have some value. The next guy is another player that they drafted back in 2013, and that's Marko Todorovic, a center from Montenegro. He's 6'10", he weighs 240. Is there anything to be excited about with Todorovic? Not really. Not a great year from him. He played 40 games at 17 minutes a pop, only 6.7 points, 4 rebounds, 0.7 blocks, shot 59% from the field. Yeah, he's a center, that's good, but just 66% from the line, doesn't stretch the floor. Nothing overly interesting to me about what he can do. Yeah, not bad win shares numbers considering his limited minutes at 2.74. That's okay, and a decent contributor defensively. But we look at his advanced numbers, a PER of 16.3. That's nothing overly exciting to write home about. His true shooting percentage at 63 is pretty impressive, obviously, and an offensive rating of 113 as opposed to a defensive of 101. So he's probably got a little bit of a better season than what we saw from Gentile. And I could see if Todorovic did come across, there's obviously an opening in Houston with Dwight moving. He's not going to become the starter, but as a backup big man, he could do something. But He's no Thomas Satoransky for me. And I've got another Euro stash guy when we get to the Oklahoma City Thunder that I'm super excited to see come across. And he could come across next season as well. But Todorovic and Gentile, not quite in that group. And Sergio Yui, don't think he ever really comes across, unfortunately, which he would have been really fun to see. Rob Percher asked me a question. Is Capella worth a look without Dwight? He is more than worth a look. Rob, you heard me talk about him. He is more than worth a look. I don't think I need to get too much more into him. Joseph Diffenbach says, what sort of front court rotation do you see happening under D'Antoni? Well, I think they go Capella and Motiejunas is the way that they should start, and I think Decker starts really getting involved and playing some four. That would be the way that, again, I don't know what's going to happen in free agency. I don't know if they're going to trade. I don't know who they're going to bring in, but that would Motiejunas, Capella, Harrell with a little bit there, and you play some Decker much more than the 6 minutes that he played last season. I think that he can really start to develop there. Scott Anderson, he says, and one of the best Twitter handles I've seen, at @pure_cromulence, with Dwight gone for sure, who are viable candidates to join Harden as their 1-2 punch? Well, there's no real other superstars out there on the free agent market with, like Kevin Durant, and I don't think Kevin Durant's coming to Houston. I would love to see someone like Nick Batum join Houston. I think that he would be fantastic. He's not a guy that needs a high usage. He can be a secondary distributor on this team. He hits threes. He defends superbly. They might run small and put Trevor Ariza at the four. That means I could see them I could see them running out lineups with Harden as a point guard and Batum as the two as well, and going bigger and putting a Reza at the three and then getting a Motiejunas Capela lineup. I could see that lineup happening. He would be an ideal guy to come down to Houston. Whether he does or not remains to be seen. Mike Conley's not going to have any interest in coming down to this team either. What other questions have we got? Dylan Shuck says, where do they go from here? They bounce back, and they will be better than this. So many more factors as opposed to just playing personnel cause this decline, I think. They're going to lose Howard, and he's going to be... You can't replace a guy like that, but Capela should step up. McDaniel should see better role. Decker will get better. Beverly, I think, improves. Harden's already as good as he is. And maybe they attract Chandler Parsons back. Maybe that they've got some ability to bring some players in with that cap space that's opened up by Howard's departure. So they could be players and bring some guys in. I actually would love Evan Fournier on this team. I like Fournier on a lot of teams. I think Fournier on this team would work out really well as a three and play some backup two as well. So I don't think they're as completely a write-off as what some people think. The D'Antoni defense is going to be a concern, but how much worse can their defense get? I think that's the way you've got to look at it. They were a on defense. Can they get worse? Can they try less? Probably not. So you expect an uptick in offense, and if the defense can't get any worse, that's got to mean an improvement. Of course, as with everything, it remains to be seen. Remember, if you are interested in the Red Rock 30 Team Dynasty League, go to facebook.com/redrockbasketball and leave a comment on the post for this podcast, episode 605, Houston Rockets Season in Review, telling me that you want in, and then we'll go from there. And of course, a big thanks to today's new sponsor, and that is Fantrax. And if you haven't checked out Fantrax, go and do it. It is the best place to host your dynasty leagues, your keeper leagues, all of your seasonal leagues as well, but not just for basketball. They've got all sports: football, baseball, hockey, college football, college basketball, soccer. I'm sure they're expanding to other things in the future as well. Fantrax is going to be with us all the way through the season. They're going to be hosting the Red Rock series of listener leagues too. I can't wait for it. I can't wait for the NBA finals to start. I can't wait for everything. I can't wait for next season, the draft, free agency. Everything is going to be exciting. Let's get to it. That's the start of the show. I'm confused. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.